This week we begin a new series on how God uses money to shape us, with the topic His versus Mine. After all, God owns it all and merely entrusts it to us. So how are we to deal with the stress of ownership, stewardship, accountability, reward, and loss? Here's Pastor Seth.
There was a man who was a farmer in South Georgia. And a federal agency, you can tell this is a current illustration, a federal agency was suspicious that he was not paying his employees what he should be. And so they sent an agent out to his farm, knocked on the door. The farmer opened the door and he said, "Hi, I'm from the federal government. And we're here to check on your employees and how much you pay them." Farmer sort of rolled his eyes and said, "Okay." He said, "Well, I have a hired man that I have had with me for 3 years. I pay him $600 a week plus room and board." Federal agent's writing down this information. And he said, "Oh, and I have a cook. She's been with me for about 6 months. I pay her $500 a week plus room and board." And the agent noticed that the farmer sort of paused and his antenna went up. Suspicious. Farmer said, "Well, yeah, I do have another guy. He's kind of a half-wit. He works 18 hours a day. I pay him about $10 a week, and I throw in some chewing tobacco." And the federal agent said, "I knew it! I knew it!" He said, "I want to talk to that half-wit." The farmer said, "You are." Anybody that runs a company, nonprofit, or a home budget, you probably appreciate that story. Money is one of those things that causes a lot of stress for people. Time also, we think, causes stress. I think my generation is going to be known as the stress management generation. Because we're stressed out about our money, we're stressed out about our time, we're stressed out about our relationships, stressed out about our kids, stressed out about their school, stressed out about their future, stressed out about my health. We're stressed out about everything. How do we normally think about stress? What I hear the most is, "I'm just overcommitted. I need to cut back, scale back, simplify my life, not be involved in so many things. Then I wouldn't have so much stress." I think about, "We just need to get on a budget. We're spending too much. I need to work harder, get more money to come in." Probably hear that second most. Now, what's so intriguing to me about stress is that I know some folks, and probably so do you, that have large amounts of discretionary time and discretionary money and are still stressed out. That should be an intriguing thought. What really causes stress? In your handout, a major driver of stress is our insistence to be in control. And there are two important words in that sentence. Our insistence to be in control. Insistence to be in control. Now, the paradox about control is we think we'd like being in control. And when life is going swell, we like just to sit back and go, "Isn't life great? I am the master of my world." Now that's nice when that happens. But when life is not going well, then control is sort of like this baseball bat clubbing you mercilessly. "What's wrong with you? You're not doing a very good job of controlling your world." We never, ever imagine that the insistence to sit in this chair and be in control of my life is the driver of my stress. Usually it doesn't occur to us. When life is going well, we like it. When life is not going well, then we don't like control. What happens when life is out of control? Then you'll become like a video game, an angry bird. And someday, people will be playing that angry game bird on their phone, and they're going to see your face come across the screen. Won't that be lovely? Control. Now, is that how it's supposed to be? The title of today's message is His versus Mine. His versus Mine. Is he in control of my life, or am I in control of my life? Do what I have belong to him, or does it belong to me? Do I have the prime responsibility for the things in my life? the prime responsibility for the things in my life, or does he have the prime responsibility for the things in my life? Psalm 24 says, the earth is the Lord's. That's a statement of ownership. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, for he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. In other words, from God's point of view, I own everything, and you would do well to recognize that about this world. That's an important piece of information, not just to know about, but to help you as you look at life, to understand life and to understand what I am doing. This is a hard lesson for us to really learn, because intuitively, what we think is, I need to be sitting in this chair, and God is working every day to get us to get out of this chair and move over here where he's in control. And one of the things he does to help us do that is he reaches down into the finances in our life and he just closes down that spigot. And have you noticed it doesn't really take much for him to do that? It's pretty easy for him to do that. It gets our attention. God, what are you trying to do in my life? That's what we're going to look at in the next 5 weeks. Luke 18, Jesus said, he called the children to him and said, let the children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. What is he saying? What does it mean to live on this side of the stage? What does it mean for him to be in control? The image here is of a child. I tell you the truth, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter into it. Now, when I was growing up, every September, my mother had a whole lot of fun. She would take us to the store, and we got school clothes. School clothes. We got school supplies. I remember getting my little peachy folder. I like to color in all the different athletes on my peachy folder. You remember this? Peachy, the peachy folder. That's cool. Put in my papers, and I had my little zipper pouch with my colored pencils and my real pencils. I had a blue pen and a red pen. Had my paper. Yeah. I was outfitted. Yeah. You know what? All the years growing up, I never once thought, oh, no. What if my mother doesn't get us school supplies this fall? What am I going to do? Am I going to go to school without school supplies? Now, I never thought about my school clothes all that much. My mother did in the purchasing of it, and she was also constantly on me about taking care of my blue jeans, because I learned my mother did not like attaching patches to my knees. Anybody else have this when you were growing up? Attaching patches to the knees. And I was not a good listener. And so I could put a lot of holes in my jeans around the knees from just playground and recess. And so I think my mother, we sort of had this jujitsu thing going on, where she would buy the largest god-awful patches she could find. And it looked like notebook paper she had attached there. I think almost to humiliate me to say, you better think about this, pal. You're gonna slide into, you're gonna slide into second base on your belly? Think about this, you know. School, I never thought about that. Now, I was delightfully dependent on my parents. There wasn't an ounce of stress about school supplies, school clothes, school lunches. Hardly even thought about it. Delightfully dependent. Now, I bore a certain amount of responsibility, but not prime responsibility. Now, this is the metaphor that Jesus uses here to describe us. What he wants is, instead of sitting in that control chair that's laden with stress, he wants us over here where he is my mom and dad, and I am the kid, delightfully dependent on Pop. He has prime responsibility for the resources. I bear secondary responsibility for the resources in my life. At the bottom of your handout, stress comes from having to control something you intuitively deem as essential to your well-being. If you're trying to figure out what drives me so much, why am I so stressed out, the two notes on the first page of your outline, I encourage you to think about and pray about and just ask God, what's going on inside of me? Now, on the inside of your handout, there are three big principles we're going to look at and two smaller principles we're going to look at. The first principle is the principle of ownership, the principle of stewardship, and the principle of accountability. This is a way of seeing life from God's point of view instead of from my point of view over here, where I am the owner and I am in control. I get to decide what I do with the resources that I have. First principle is ownership. God is the owner, not me. In the Old Testament, David and the leaders were trying to raise money to build the first temple. It took a lot of money. And the leaders gave first. When the people saw how much the leaders gave, the people said, I want to get on that action. And they jumped in. And when it was all said and done, David gets up to pray, and he is dumbfounded. And this is part of what he prays to God. He said, in a public way, who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? And then notice what he says next, and notice how he sees life. He says, everything comes from you, and we have given you only what comes from your hand. He understands this side of the stage. God is the owner, we are the steward. Everything that we have belongs to him. Question is, what am I doing with what he's given me? Psalm 50, verse 10, every animal of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. Even all the little details of life, things of this life belong to him. Psalm 100, verse 3, know that the Lord is God, it is he who made us, and we are his. Not just things, not just cattle, people belong to him. That's how we're supposed to live over here. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Now, this is a hard thing to grasp for any of us, but also if you're a teenager, this is hard to grasp. You're not going to like this story, especially that I'm telling your parents this, but you can sabotage my coffee after we get done here. My son had done something, I don't remember what it was, but it obviously required discipline, and he was too big to spank at that point. And so Mindy and I got together, we talked, we decided to take some things out of his room. I don't remember what those were. When he came home from school, went into his room and noticed that some of his prized possessions were gone, he came to me and he said, Dad, where's my stuff? I said, we removed it. No longer in your room. He said, but Dad, that stuff is mine. I said, oh, son. Ah, contraire. Everything in our house belongs to me and to your mother. We let you use it. Sometimes. It's a hard lesson really for teenagers to learn. It's a hard lesson for adults to learn as well. Now, I want to tell you a true story that you're going to think is kind of silly. And it's kind of facetious. It's silly and facetious because it is so foreign to how we think about life. A number of years ago, Mindy was working and I was working, and we had two cars, and one of the cars went out. And a fellow I know said, it sounds like your transmission, it was an old car, you're probably going to need to have it rebuilt. I called the transmission place, said, what does it cost to rebuild an Oldsmobile transmission? Gave him the thing, it was $1,800. I kind of gulped. Because of that $1,800, we had the first two numbers. We had 18. What we didn't have was the two zeros on the end. And I remember thinking, wow, what are we going to do with that? Now, if you're over here and you get that news, a car's out, you're going to get a transmission, and your finances are not doing all that good, you're going to be one stressed out puppy. And if you're married, you're probably going to have two stressed out people. And you're going to have not just a financial problem, but a marital problem as well. Now, thankfully, this was not our first rodeo with something like this. And so I remember sitting down and saying to God, God, you have a problem. One of your cars is not running. It gets the two of us to work. One of you know how this works. If you want your car running again, you're going to have to figure out a way to get that puppy fixed. Provide somebody that wants to come over and help the Gatchels out. That'd be fine. Provide the last two zeros after that 18. That would be fine. But it's obvious to me that you have the primary responsibility for resources, and I have the secondary responsibility for resources. Now, that sounds silly, doesn't it? And facetious. But that's how God sees life. That's how he sees us. He wants me to come as a delightfully dependent child to him. Now, you may think, well, I don't know, Seth, that sounds pretty way out there to me. Let me tell you what the opposite would look like. Let's say that you see your five-year-old is sitting outside on the curb crying his eyes out, and his bike is down there next to him, and you walk out as, in this case, you're God, and he's a child who's not delightfully dependent. He's crying his eyes out, and you sit down next to him and say, son, what's wrong? He said, Dad, don't you see my bike? Yeah. It's got a flat tire. Oh, yeah. He said, I ran over a nail. You see the nail? Dad, do you know how much bike tires cost? Wow, looks like you also broke a tube there. Oh, Dad, do you know how much tubes cost? I don't have money to buy a tire. I don't have money to buy a tube. Dad, do you know how much it takes for a repair guy to fix a flat tire on a bike? And Dad, I can't even get my bike to the repair shop. That's what it would look like as a five-year-old kid who's not delightfully dependent. Fast forward 20 years. That's you sitting in that chair. This is the principle of ownership. Who really owns what I have, God or me? Principle number two is stewardship. God entrusts us with what's his. And here Jesus tells just a masterful story. And as I thought about this all week and telling this story, one of my lowest hope was that I wouldn't screw the story up. So if you hear nothing else, just hear the story. It's a magnificent story. Now, there are several characters in the story. There's the owner or the master or the estate guy or the ranch, the owner of the ranch, the rich guy. And there are three servants. There are two of the servants that understand what it's like to live on this side of the stage. And there's one servant who only understands what it's like to sit in this chair. Okay? That's the story. Now, the guy's going to go on a business trip. And he brings these three guys together. The story begins this way. It would be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. So, the story is a picture of God as the owner and then two types of people living on this side of the stage or on this side of the stage entrust his property, resources to them. You say, wait a minute, Seth, I don't know about this whole ownership thing, entrusting. I'm going to work tomorrow. My boss is going to expect me to work about 10 hours tomorrow. I'm going to put in about 55 hours this week. It doesn't seem like my job is really entrusted to me by God. Well, in Deuteronomy, Moses says, remember the Lord your God. It is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. Even your job and even the ability to sit down, whether it's a computer screen or a phone, whatever it is that you do, some widget you're running through, he gives you the ability to do those things and so confirm his covenant, which he swore to your forefathers, as it is today. The antidote to stress is stewardship. It's understanding that God is the owner and all the resources entrusted to me, time, money, people, opportunities, I'm supposed to use for him. And to bear the responsibilities in my life. I'm a steward. I'm to be delightfully dependent with the resources he's entrusted to me as the secondary author of those resources. He continues. To one, he gave 5 talents of money, one guy over here. To another, he gave 2 talents. To the fellow over here, 1 talent, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. Okay, so ownership. stewardship. Okay. Third principle, accountability. God settles accounts. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. Now he talks to the guy with five, said, I entrusted you with five. What'd you do with the five I gave you? Comes to the second guy. What'd you do with the two I gave you? Comes to the third guy. What'd you do with the one I gave you? Now, for some reason in our culture has a hard time with this principle of accountability. Is it harsh of God to hold us accountable, especially if we're sinners and we can't do what we're supposed to do? Is that kind of harsh of God to be accountable with us? I don't know why we have such a problem with accountability. One day you all will get to pay taxes. And you know what? The IRS is going to hold you accountable to pay your taxes. Isn't that right? And they're pretty good at that. They send you all kinds of letters in the mail announcing their intention to do that. And if you don't pay as much as they think you should, you'll get to hear from them. They will hold you accountable. And if you don't pay in a timely way and as much, they add things like penalties and interest. That's accountability. One day you all will get to pay bills. Oh, joy. The water bill. We get three water bills here at church. Lance has tried to explain this to me. I still don't understand it. But you know what happens if we don't pay our water bills? No water. Pay electric bill. In the summer, was it 3,000? Is that the highest we hit?
For electricity?
Yeah. 3,800. Just for electricity. 1 month. And if we don't pay that, guess what? We're going to be meeting at the park next August. We aren't going to be in here. And if you don't pay in a timely way, they will send you reminders with late fees. Accountability. If you don't do your homework, your teacher will hold you accountable, and your parents will as well. Now, you may not like accountability. I certainly did when I was a kid. But we need accountability. Is it difficult to see that God wouldn't do the same thing? He entrusts things to us that are his. Is it not reasonable to assume that he would hold us accountable for those things that are his? Romans says each one of us give an account of himself to God. Hebrews 9 says, just as man is destined to die once and after that to face judgment. I know that one day I will be standing before God and he's going to ask me a simple question among several things. But one of them is, what did you do with what I entrusted to you? That's a good question. That question keeps me moving in good directions. I need that to be responsible steward with what he's entrusted to me. All right, so those are the three big principles: ownership, stewardship, accountability. Now, the rest of this little story has to do with two outcomes: reward or loss. Reward or loss. Let's look at reward. God rewards us for our investments. Matthew 25, the master replies first to the guy that was given five. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Now, if you've read this story a few times, you probably yawned already, even before I read this. Well done, good and faithful servant. Faithful with a few things, give you more. Come and share your master's happiness. But I want you to think about these words a little bit more. About 2.5 years ago, the news flashed that Whitney Houston was found submerged in a bathtub at the Beverly Hills Hilton Hotel. And one of the questions I thought about when I heard that was, how do we really know that our life matters? Does professional achievement answer that question? My life matters. Does fame answer that question? My life matters. 20,000 people in the arena cheering me as I sing. Does that do it? Does fortune do it? Does a palatial estate do it? If none of those things are really enough to tell me in my heart my life really matters, and I really don't see any other way, I still at least want to feel like my life matters. Maybe alcohol and drugs, I know I probably shouldn't do those things, but I just so want to feel like my life matters, even for a few minutes or a couple hours. Now, these words here, what I would like to suggest, are the kinds of words you and I chase for all our life. These are not words that are just someday, when you guys put me in the ground, I'm going to be glad to hear, I hope to hear these words. These are words that today can be heard at least faintly, if you'll listen. Well done, good and faithful servant. Well done, good and faithful servant. Well done, good and faithful servant. And doesn't something like that resonate in your heart? Don't you long to hear somebody look at you and say something like that? Well done, good and faithful servant. Now, I think there are four things that strike me in this particular, this particular verse. And these are in your handout. If you are a note taker, you have four words to fill in. The first one is the word appreciation. These words strike the note of somebody appreciates not what I do, but who I am. Appreciation. Who you are. Someone significant notices what you did, and it mattered to them. The second word here is affirmation. This has to do with they saw what you did, and they liked it. That was good. You did good. Someone significant notices what you did, and it made a difference. The third one, and this is the surprising one to us. Never saw this coming. I doubt these two guys, the five and the two talent guy, ever saw this coming either. The third one is acquisition. What you get, you were given extra privilege and reward. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. What? Reward? More? For me? That's the bonus one out of this four. And the last one is affection. He finishes, come and share your master's happiness. In other words, you know what? Sit down. Let's go have dinner together today. Let's go enjoy each other's company. What's it like to be able to sit down with somebody who sees you and what you've done and is just tickled pink about it and thinks that it matters, it was important? You and I are searching every day for something like that. We're not going to find it sitting in that chair. It's only when somebody outside of ourselves and bigger than ourselves, when we're kids, that's our dad and mom. But who does that happen with adults, when we're adults? This is the principle of reward for those who are stewards. The last one on the back of your handout is loss. God removes what we will not invest. Now, the two guys, the first two servants with five and two, that's how we're supposed to be. God has worked in our lives to get ourselves out of that chair and over on this side of the stage. But the last part of this picture describes the person who is still over here sitting in this chair. This is the guy who was given one talent. And by inference, apart from Christ working in our lives, this is you and me. It's everyone. The man who had received the one talent came. He knows the axe is about to fall. Master, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. Now, remember, the parable is a picture of God as the master and two different people. What he's saying here is, God, as I look at the world here, it looks to me like you're not doing all that good a job. Seems like there's an awful lot of unfairness out there. You expect me to give up control to somebody where it looks like it's out of control over there? I don't think so. There's not a chance in the world me moving out of this seat. I am planted here, and I plan on staying here all my life. Notice what he's saying to God is, God, you're a schmuck. I'll be damned if I'm going to trust you with the things in my life. Now, if you want a parallel here, try telling this to your boss tomorrow at work. You know, boss, I put a lot of hours in here. I've been here a lot of years. But I got to tell you, I saw what you did with Christmas bonuses last December, and you are a schmuck. You probably have about 5 minutes to clean out your desk before they escort you out of the building. But what Jesus is telling us in this story is this is where we all start. This is the attitude that we have towards God that is embedded in our heart, whether we're aware of it or not. Verse 25, so I was afraid, and I went out, hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. And in one fell swoop, he dismisses all of his responsibility, rationalizes away what he did, doesn't even consider that his attitude is horrific towards the master or towards God. And then at the end, caps it off with the icing of feeling noble by returning the one talent that had been entrusted to him in the first place. Glued in the seat, the master replies, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew? And here I can almost hear Jesus raising his voice ever so slightly and giving that edge here. So you knew? Meaning that's what you thought you knew, but that's not how it really is. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Even if that was how you saw life, and that apparently it is, at least, he says, you should have put my money on deposit with the banker so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Wouldn't even gather seed for the smallest of reasons. To take what the owner had entrusted to him in the first place. Take the talent from him. Give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more. He will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has, will be taken away. Verse 30. Throw the worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This chair of control may seem like the most reasonable thing in the world to you. But it's the seed of death. It's the seed of stress. It's the seed of stress for you, and it will be the seed of stress out of which you will stress the people in your life, usually the ones living under the same roof as you, or sometimes in the same life group as you, or sometimes in the same church as you, or sometimes in the same workplace as you, or sometimes in the same neighborhood, or on the same U7 girls soccer team. Control. It's an awful taskmaster. Paul says, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. He's speaking to the Christians here in Corinth. You are not your own. You were bought at a price. You and I didn't get over here because we were just such sharp people, such spiritually attuned people. You were bought at a price. What got me from that chair over here? It took the death of his son before yours truly would wake up from 20 years of sitting in this chair thinking, I got life wrapped right around my finger. I know what to do. One until I understood the cross and that somebody died for me. And I began to ponder, what kind of problem is it I really have? The men that hunt for monkeys in Africa have probably the simplest job in all the world. You'd say, man, how are you gonna capture monkeys? They're fast, agile, they jump high, climb trees, swing from tree to tree. What do you do to catch a monkey? These guys show up about sundown, with these big jars that look like the things that the water people bring to work and they dump, you know, the big water thing. You know, they bring a bunch of these things, except these jars are heavy. And they just have, however many they have, they just lay them out there on the jungle floor and they throw some nuts, aromatic nuts, in the jars. And they go back into their trucks, head home, have dinner, sit back, enjoy a nice quiet evening, come back in the morning, and every jar has a monkey. You know how they get caught? The monkey smells the nuts. It goes over there and tries to see the nuts, but it can't get in the back of the end of the jar. And he sticks his hand in the opening, reaches in to grab the nuts, and gets a handful of nuts. Got him in his grip. And when he tries to extract that grip of nuts, he can't get it out of the jar. It's stuck. And that monkey will stay in that way all night, unwilling to let go of control of those nuts. You say, well, he's kind of trapped by the trappers. Well, sort of. But if you want to understand this a little bit better, he's trapped by his own insistence on having control. Let's pray together. Father, we all start out on the side of the stage with the chair there. We know what that's like. And maybe after enough times of misery, we finally ask ourselves, is there another place on this stage to stand? And thankfully there is. You've made possible through the death of your Son, without whom we would never see this. We would just continue on in our little angry bird game, being mad at the world and in control and mad at the people who aren't getting it right, doing what they ought to do, and slowly shrivel up as people. But thankfully, you are the owner. And you desire us to live as delightfully dependent children, not as the primary responsibility for our resources, but as the secondary responsibility for resources. Not to live as all bent out of shape and all uptight and angry and irritated and depressed, but as people who know their Father. Dad knows where the bike shop is. Dad knows how to fix flat tires. Dad can even provide ways to fix transmissions. And a whole lot more. Father, you are using finances in this way, whether we're aware of it or not, to get us from the right side of the stage to the left side of the stage. Would you help us today to see this? To recognize this truth about life? Instead of continuing on just being mad about it, help us to enter in as children and allow you to be our Heavenly Father.
We at Pacific Church of Irvine invite you to join us every Sunday at 9:30. You can also visit our website at pacificchurch.com.